This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Hutchins! Double order!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Maddie, what are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
Welcome one and all to the Awful Announcing Podcast. This is Matt Yoder once again with you. And we talk to a lot of broadcasters, play-by-play men, analysts, sports writers, bloggers, media observers, a lot of different people around the industry. But I'm always excited to talk to one of the all-time great players because, after all of us are sports fans. That's why we're in this business. And particularly to talk to one of those great players who has just made the transition into broadcasting. And with that, we're going to welcome one of those individuals to the podcast today, NBA All-Star Grant Hill of Turner Sports and NBA TV, to talk about the transition made this year, his work co-hosting Inside Stuff, and what he'll be doing at NBA All-Star Weekend. So let's bring in Grant Hill right now. We're pleased to welcome now to the podcast a seven-time NBA All-Star, Olympic gold medalist, one of the best players of this generation, now the co-host of NBA Inside Stuff and a big part of Turner's NBA coverage, Grant Hill. Grant, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's begin with All-Star Weekend coming up, which you're going to be a big part of. First, you and Chris Webber going to be general managers for the Rising Stars game that leads off All-Star Weekend, February 14th. You're actually doing the draft tonight on Thursday during the episode of Inside the NBA on TNT. Now, we've seen fantasy drafts become very popular for these All-Star festivities, so are you using your Duke education here to look at past All-Star drafts and developing a winning strategy for this game?
Well, I have not looked at past All-Star drafts, because I've played in All-Star games and I've certainly watched a number of them through the years, and I've played against some of the players, mainly the second-year guys, have played last year. I kind of know what I feel like in All-Star games you need to get. You know, I have an idea of the kinds of players, and so it doesn't mean I'll do a good job, but certainly, I feel like the guards tend to dominate in these types of settings. You know, you need to have good guard play. And you need to have good shooters, and you need to have, an athletic big or two who can run the court and defend. So that's kind of loosely what my game plan is and my strategy. And it'll be fun to go through this draft process with Chris Webber, with some assistance from Kenny Smith, Shaq, and Chris Charles Barkley. So it'll be a fun time.
Can you take us inside your big board and tell us who the first name is?
I don't have the first pick. You know, I don't want to give away too much, but Webber, because he seniority, even though Chris is younger than me, but Chris has been a broadcaster longer than I've been. I'm the rookie of the group. Chris has the first pick. And so I have a couple names I'm thinking of. I have three guys, I think, who are all worthy of the first pick.
Really? So can you tell us? One of those guys, maybe.
We'll go first, but I have three names. I think Lillard. I mean, obviously, Damian Lillard's played out of his mind. Since he's coming to the league, he's made the All-Star game, so he'll be playing on Sunday. And as a second-year player, last year's Rookie of the Year. I don't want to make assumptions, but I'm assuming that Chris will take him with the first pick.
Yeah. Now, TNT is promising competitive banter during the game between you and Chris Webber. So what's the best trash talk you have lined up for C-Web?
It'll be subtle. I mean, there's a couple Michigan guys that are in this game. And the great thing is Chris and I, we go way back. We've known each other since we were in middle school and competed against one another in AAU tournaments, and then high school, college, NBA. We just had dinner last night, and we were reminiscing about a number of things that we were fortunate to experience together. And so, Yeah, I mean, there'll be some little jabs, back and forth, but it'll be all in fun, and, we respect each other. And obviously, we're calling the game, but we also want to see our respective teams win. And so it'll be interesting. You know, for me, it'll be the first time I've ever called a game, so that I'm looking forward to that. But I don't think you ever really call a game where you have, an interest in who wins. So that could make it even more entertaining.
Yeah, that'll be a different dynamic for sure. Now, for the All-Star game itself, you have the unique position of being embedded on one of the benches throughout the game to do reports and interviews. What are you looking forward to most about that role? Do you think there's a way that maybe they won't give you Greg Popovich for your first interview if he happens to be somewhere in the building that day?
Yeah, I hope not. I hope these guys don't give me the Greg Popovich, but you never know. It'll be fun. It'll be fun just having a chance to, I've been there. I've been in games. You make a great play. You certainly want to talk about plays you've made, performance you're having, performance of your teammates, maybe interviewing some of the first-time guys, their first experience, what they're going through throughout the course of the game. So, having been there and been in that situation throughout my career, it'll be fun. It won't be... we're not talking Charlie Rose here. I mean, this will be all in fun and certainly getting their perspective. And really just trying to give the fans, a little bit about what's going on and going through their heads during the game.
There's been so much talk around sports in recent years about fixing All-Star games and reviving interest in them. In that discussion, how do you think the NBA is positioned? And what would you do if given the chance to give an added boost to All-Star Weekend?
I think in other sports, in other sports, they obviously football has had some trouble with the Pro Bowl, and because of the physicality of the sport and the timing of it, it makes it difficult for guys to want to go out and hit full contact. I know baseball has struggled through the years. I actually think of the major sports. I think basketball is competitive. I mean, obviously the defense is not, like a normal regular season game. But I think pride is on the line. I think when you get down to that fourth quarter, no team wants to lose. And then there's money. There's an incentive, financially. If you lose, you get a check. If you win, you get a bigger check. And for all these guys who are millionaires and making extreme amounts of money, a check. Money is always a good motivator in that sense. But, maybe there's ways. Maybe you can tweak some things. Maybe, home court advantage in the playoffs or in the finals. That wouldn't, certainly matter to a lot of players on teams because not every team would make it. But I like the NBA All-Star Weekend. And, I like how it's structured. I think certainly the slam dunk contest, some years can be very exciting. I think more years than not, it's tough. It just depends on the caliber of dunkers. I think back to Vince Carter, back in 2000, Dwight Howard brought some excitement with the costumes. And so, that just depends on the quality of play. But I think the skills challenge, I think the three-point shootout is always a fan favorite. And then the game itself, I think it's a good game. I think you got the best players in the world out there playing, and they're competitors. And eventually, whether it may not be the first quarter, but eventually, guys will start competing.
Let's move to your broadcast career. Obviously, you had the reputation as one of the smartest guys in the league during your playing days. Was broadcasting always something that you had in mind to do after your career was over? Was it something that came to you more suddenly as a viable second career option? And why go this route instead of maybe getting into coaching or looking at some other work?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I'm the smartest player. I mean, I take that as a compliment, but that might be a stretch. I think with the broadcasting thing, it's something that I had done before. It's just sort of more of a part-time role. I think back to the mid-90s, you know, in the playoffs when my team might have been eliminated, being a guest analyst. I know some of those years I was hurt in Orlando early 2000. I remember doing the finals and doing the playoffs, and then also doing the finals for ESPN 2007 when the Spurs beat the Cleveland Cavs. Just throughout the course of my playing career, I've had some opportunities to go up and do some studio work and enjoyed it, you know, without really putting a lot of thought into it and really being prepared and getting a lot of reps, if you will. I was able to go out there and talk and get my thoughts and ideas on what was happening throughout the season or throughout the playoffs. And so, yeah, I always kind of thought maybe there'd be an opportunity when I'm done playing to do this. And sure enough, I retired, and then, you know, the phone started to ring, and, here we are now. I enjoy it, and, there were some opportunities to get involved in some front offices and to get into coaching in some form or fashion. And, you know, when you've been playing almost 20 years and you're in that hamster wheel, if you will, and you just the grind of it, you know, you want to get away from it. You need to sort of remove yourself from it a little bit. You need to decompress, you know, and so certainly, that applies to me. Yeah, I never really wanted to coach. I don't think that's something I'd like to do. I mean, I never want to say never, but if I really wanted to coach, I still would want to get away from it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I always kind of envisioned maybe a front office position, but you know, who knows? I mean, I enjoy TV. I enjoy being around the game. It's a great family, a great network of folks who I work with. You know, most of the guys that I'm working with are contemporaries of mine, guys I've competed against. So it feels good, one, to not be the oldest guy. oldest guy of the group. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it, and it's something that, I'm a rookie, and this is new. And even though I've had experience, I'm still learning. I'm very open to feedback and just looking to, the same sort of attitude and mindset you have as a player. You're just looking to improve. You're looking to get better. And the good thing, I think, as athletes is that we're used to being coached. You know, we are used to feedback, be it good or bad. And it's not something that, actually, I think we crave feedback in a lot of ways. And I think for someone who's starting off and doesn't have any sort of formal training in this world, I've learned a great deal in such a short period of time.
It's fascinating to go from that veteran role and then immediately transition to being a rookie now in television, as you said. So have you talked to a lot of the Turner guys there, like Chris Webber, like, of course, Barkley, Kenny Smith, Shaq, guys that have been doing this and have been widely regarded as the best in the business for quite some time? Did you talk to them a lot about getting into television full-time, and what influence have they given you, what coaching have they given you along the way so far?
Yeah, I've talked to Chris Webber, I've talked to Kenny Smith, Steve Smith, and all those guys. I've even talked to Ahmad Rashad, who does some work with NBA TV and obviously was the original host of Inside Stuff. And I think they all have some great, great insights and advice. I think the main thing that everyone has said, the thing that was consistent, was just be yourself. Don't try to be someone else. Don't try to be Ahmad or Charles or, just be you, And so that may sound, pretty basic, but certainly, you're influenced by those that you watch. And, as a fan and as someone who's watched all of those guys on television, you certainly want to be influenced by them, but you want to be yourself. You want to, and don't think that because you are a rookie at this, that you don't have, you're not prepared. I mean, the best preparation was playing for 19 years. And so the insights, the perspective that, 19-year career brings to the table, know, that's very much valued. And so, you know, I mean, basically that's the kind of advice, that's the kind of kinds of conversations that we've had. And it's been good, you know, talking to your peers, talking to guys who've gone through it, who've made that transition and have, you know, become, you know, some of the best in the business. It certainly helps me as I've made that transition.
Inside Stuff has been around for such a long time. It's been such a big part of the NBA's run on television over the years, brought back this year with you as co-host. How is your presence on that show and Inside Stuff as a whole? How is it evolving now, this year, and the comeback with you on board?
It's been good. I've enjoyed it. It's really been amazing. You know, it's a great show. It's a show that, you know, obviously tells stories and brings the personalities of today's players to life. It gives the audience an access, gives them a chance to know more about the guys, and it's a safe place. I think I think people, you know, players are less guarded and are willing to just open up and be themselves because they trust the franchise, they trust the brand, they trust, you know, it's us, it's an NBA show. And so, you know, and it's great that it's come back, and it's certainly been received well. And, you know, and for me personally, I mean, you know, it's tough. It's like doing a sequel to a great movie with a different cast of characters, you know. and so you want to do it justice, but you're also trying to figure it out. And I really like where we are right now with the show and sort of the comfort level and the rhythm and the routine of it. And so at first it was tough, you know. It was hard for me, probably a whole lot easier for Kristen. She's done a lot of television work and just sort of getting used to, you know, reading the teleprompter, being conversational and injecting some personality. And I mean, all these different things that I had never really done before. And then also taking the script and making it my own. I mean, all these different things. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel 100% better. I did, you know, actually ironically bumped into Ahmad Rashad and Willow Bay about a month ago. And they had some great advice, and you know, and they kind of, you know, also said they were fans of it, and, you know, were very encouraging. So sort of getting their blessing was certainly, you know, good for me and my confidence. But it's been good. It's been a really good thing, and I've enjoyed not just the storytelling aspect, but the technical side, the behind the scenes, the sort of understanding how a show like this is made and all the moving parts, and certainly have a better understanding, but also a greater appreciation for that.
Do you think you'd want to step into the broadcast booth and try some more games in the future? Are you happy to have this role in the studio with Inside Stuff right now and get to do all the things that you just mentioned with this show?
Well, I mean, I love the show, and I also love doing the studio analyst work, you know, being in the studio and you know, whether it's a pregame, game time show on NBA TV, tonight on Inside the NBA, time to time filling in for guys when they're out. And so I enjoy the studio work, too, you know, but I'm curious, and I'm interested, and I'll have some opportunities to do in the future some actual games. And talking to people, you know, I was talking to Weber last night, and he really enjoys it. And I was complimenting him on how good he is, and I really enjoyed him last year in the playoffs with Dick Stockton. And, you know, so we were just talking about all the intricacies of doing the games and different personalities of your play-by-play guy and so on. But, you know, I think actually being there, you know, close to the action, on the court, you know, in the building, there's got to be something sort of, you know, enjoyable about that and sort of takes you close to actually playing, so without being out there. So I've never done it, and that's why I'm looking forward to doing it in New Orleans for the Rising Stars Challenge. But, yeah, I mean, I think sort of having the opportunity, and certainly Turner and NBA TV has allowed me to do this, but just having an opportunity to do a number of different things during my rookie year, and just sort of figuring it all out, and it's been fun.
We may have to have an NBA Broadcaster Rookie of the Year category. You're definitely a contender in, Grant. Now, let's wrap up.
I appreciate that.
Let's wrap up with a few minutes on the NBA season so far. And to me, Grant, one of maybe the most fascinating thing to watch has been the season-long duel between Kevin Durant and LeBron James for MVP and how they seem to be pushing each other. I mean, you look at the stats, Durant, 31 points per game, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, a 51-42-88 shooting split. James, 26 per game, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, shooting an ungodly 58% from the floor. So I will ask you the impossible question, put those Rookie of the Year credentials on the line. You have to make the choice. Who is having the better season right now? And you have to pick one. You can't pick both.
Right. Well, I mean, I'd have to give the nod to Durant. And it's hard to do because they're both worthy. You know, my question for Durant is, I mean, he's had great seasons, you know, the last few years. But if he doesn't get it this year, assuming, you know, the race is done now, I mean, when is he ever going to get it?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, it's interesting. There were times back in the 90s where we all knew that Michael Jordan was the best player. He was the best player in the game. I don't think anybody would have argued with that. But he didn't always win the MVP. You know, there were years, you know, Karl Malone won it a few times. I know Akeem Olajuwon. I mean, you know, so the MVP didn't always go necessarily to the best player. And so, you know, you could argue that Durant's better than LeBron. I mean, certainly people I know have done that and made that argument. But I think with Westbrook out and with his play and stepping things up and having Oklahoma still a top team in the Western Conference, which is, we all know, is a very difficult conference in itself. You know, and just his play in January and the string of 30-point games, the 40-point games, a lot of times it's not necessarily, it doesn't always come down to the end of the season. I think a lot of times in the MVP running is the hype throughout the course of the season. I think Durant has built up tremendous momentum this season. And so I think he's the favorite, and, you know, barring any kind of injury or anything of that sort, I mean, I think he's probably going to get it this year.
It's been interesting, too, Grant, to look at some of the numbers, and if you dive deeper into the statistics, especially some of the advanced statistics, true shooting percentages, usage rates, things of that nature, there's arguments out there that these are two of the best seasons in NBA history. And when you look at just the points per game, rebounds, assists, you may not see those numbers because, yeah, guys have put up more points per game, more rebounds, assists. But diving into the numbers, you really see how elite these two seasons are in the context of NBA history. It's been amazing to watch so far this season. Now, both of those teams are certainly favorites in the East and the West. But if you look throughout the two conferences and the discrepancy between East and West so far this season, Toronto, 26-23, third in the East right now. They would be 10th in the West. It's been bad before in recent years, but this year seems to be the most extreme. So will there ever be a day when the East has parity with the West again? And how do you explain this prolonged period of dominance that the Western Conference has seemed to have over their Eastern counterparts?
Well, I think there'll be a day when that happens. I mean, I think, you know, it all sort of goes in cycles. I mean, I think when I came in the league in the mid-90s, I felt like maybe the Eastern Conference might have been, give them a little bit of a nod in terms of level of play. I thought the Eastern Conference was better than the West overall. But, you know, I mean, you think about it. 6-7 years ago, the dominant teams in the Western Conference, there was really, you know, it might have been three dominant teams. I thought the Suns, the Mavericks, and the Spurs. And, you know, and certainly as a result of having great players on those teams. You had Mar Stoudemire, Steve Nash, you had Dirk Nowitzki, Jason Kidd, you know, you had obviously the Big Three in San Antonio. And certainly San Antonio has remained, but you know, Durant there, he, you know, Westbrook on the same. I mean, so a lot of it just depends on the talented players and where they are. You know, I think the East, you know, I think you got to give the Eastern Conference some time. I think there's some good young players good young teams that are developing and emerging. And I can, you know, I can envision, you know, in a few years, you know, 3 years down the line, seeing you know, teams in the East with better records and potentially the Eastern Conference surpassing the Western Conference. So, I mean, you know, it's hard to sort of look at a crystal ball and ultimately come to some sort of conclusion. But, you know, it's you know, the West is loaded, you know, and you know, there's some great players and great teams there. And, you know, Portland, for example, one of the great stories this year in the NBA, a team that was you know, last year 10th or 11th in the final standings. They make a few subtle changes in the offseason, nothing dramatic, and they come out and have an amazing year this year and, you know, are in the conversation in terms of being contenders. And so, you know, nobody really saw that coming, but to watch them, you know, emerge as a talented team, you know, it's fun to watch. And you could very, you know, very easily you could see that happening in a couple of years with some of these teams in the East. So that's, to me, what's exciting about the game. And I'll tell you this, you know, I cover, obviously, for NBA TV, and we do games. Some of these games in the Eastern Conference with teams that don't have great records, there's still some great games. You know, they're still very competitive. They come down the stretch. I mean, games that I've enjoyed covering and enjoyed watching. And so, you know, it's interesting. But the West has been dominant and been dominant for a while, and hopefully at some point soon the East can catch up.
You mentioned Portland. Definitely, as far as teams go, the surprise story of the season, third place in the Western Conference, Damian Lillard, you mentioned him as a possible top pick for the draft coming up tonight. Do you think that he has reached that superstar status in the league right now? Because playing in Portland, it's one of the smaller markets, West Coast. Maybe he's not getting the media attention that he deserves for what he and LaMarcus Aldridge and this collective team has done this year. Because I wonder, Grant, you look at this Trailblazers roster, maybe this reminds you of the Pistons from several years ago, where they don't have that one or two marquee LeBron James, Kevin Durant guys, but they play so well together as a team that maybe they could buck this recent trend in today's NBA where you're trying to build with one or two max players and then build a roster around them.
Well, I mean, I think because they're in Portland and, you know, because they're sort of new onto the national or the national scene, I mean, Aldridge has been playing good basketball for a few years now. And obviously, Lillard is still young, and Lillard didn't go to a college and have a big profile coming into the NBA. So this is sort of new for that franchise, you know, in the current set of players who are there. So they don't have, like, that star power, if you will, like a LeBron or a Durant, those big names. But they're big-time players. Don't get it confused. I mean, those I guess to answer part of your question with Lillard, I mean, I think he's in the conversation when you talk about top point guards. You talk about the top five point guards. It's obviously subjective, but I think Lillard's in that conversation, and he's on your list. I think the good thing about Lillard now is the team's winning. Team's getting the national recognition. His name is brought up more. People now are saying, okay, they're recognizing him and his talents. I think the bad part for Lillard is that Aldridge has been playing out of his mind. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge is making a strong case for, you know, MVP. I mean, he probably won't get it, but he's having an MVP-type season. And so, you know, you got two great players on that team, two young great players who are partially responsible. You know, a good part of their play is why, you know, Portland's playing so great. But they don't have that sort of superstar, you know, sort of image off the court, you know, and maybe that'll come with time. But to put them in the Kobe and LeBron and all that, those categories, you know, it's not there. But they're certainly there in terms of talent, and they're great, great players, and it's been fun to watch them emerge as a great, great team.
Just a couple quick questions because I know our time is almost up. How many of those teams in the West do you consider true championship contenders? Because I think pretty much everyone would agree it's going to be either Miami or Indiana out of the East. But if you look at that stacked Western Conference, I mean, you have Golden State down there as a sixth seed. Phoenix is making some noise with an unheralded roster. Jeff Hornacek's done a great job there. How many of those teams in the West do you consider true championship contenders?
You know, I think, I think two. I really do.
Really?
I think when you really, when it all boils down, you know, we know the East. The vision or the, it's more clear. You can see it. You know, it's going to be Miami or Indiana, and no one would argue with that. You know, I think Portland, they're having a great season. I think there are steps to winning a championship. And I think, you know, part of winning 4-7-game series is you're going to go through adversity. You're going to go through challenges. You're going to go and, you know, you're going to be tested. And every championship team has been tested. You can look at the back-to-back defending champions, the Miami Heat. I mean, they went through a lot their first year together. And losing, you know, and I think losing and losing the way they did to Dallas, certainly, I think, you know, it brought them together. They bonded and have come to, and so there's just an understanding. So when they're in those tough situations, when they're game six, looking like the game's over against San Antonio, they've been battle tested. You know, San Antonio, those guys have been battle tested. So I'm not quite sure Portland is there yet, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I think when it's all said and done, I think you have San Antonio, and I think you have Oklahoma City.
Wow. All that time we spent praising Portland, and then we end with crushing their championship dreams, Grant.
Well, you know, like I said, I hope I'm wrong, but I think, you know, give it some time. I think, you know, give them a couple years, and, you know, because you got every championship team, it's not easy, you know, and so far this year, it's been pretty smooth with that team, which has been great to watch, but, you know, have they been through the wars and the battles and faced, you know, rejection and failure, as a team in the playoffs when it all counts. I mean, that's when you have that collective resolve and that, you know, having been there and learning from mistakes, that's what, you can go down a list of teams, you know. I mean, I think of the Bad Boys and, you know, coming up short, you know, all that stuff. And so, anyway, that to me it has not happened yet with Portland. And, you know, so I can't put them in that conversation. So I think Indiana and Miami in the East, and I think, you know, San Antonio and Oklahoma City in the West.
All right, finally, I'll get you out of here on this. If you look at basketball today, NBA, you can even go down to college and some of the great freshmen that are there, Wiggins, Jabari Parker at Duke. Is there a player out there today that reminds you of yourself when you watch and analyze these games now?
You know, I think a lot of, you're saying, I'm sorry, in college and in the NBA?
Yeah, any player out there that you've seen, that you watch them and you think, wow, that looks like what I used to do out on the floor?
you know, it's tough because, you know, what I used to do back in my Detroit days was so long ago, it's hard to remember. I remember the role player in me the last few years of my career, but those times in Detroit, you know, it's hard to remember. But, I mean, I think certainly, I mean, I'm not a big person, big on comparisons, but, you know, I see some LeBron in terms of the versatility. Obviously, you know, he's more powerful than I was, and you know, I was maybe more finesse, but just in terms of, you know, the versatility, you know, I like this Michael Carter Williams kid. You know, he reminds me in some respects. You know, a lot of people in the Duke world want to, you know, look at Jabari Parker. I think there's some similarities, but also some differences. So, you know, I don't know. You know, it's hard for me to really answer that question. I think guys who are, you know, the 6'7", the 6'9" range, who can handle the ball, who are versatile, and do a number of things, not just score, I think tend to kind of be, you know, compared or similar in some ways. But, you know, we all have, you know, differences in our games. And so, you know, I've never been a big fan of comparisons, but I think the game has evolved and there's more guy. Paul George, I mean, he's a guy who plays on both ends and, you know, got good size and plays like a guard. I'm supposed to be an expert, but when it comes to me, I guess I'm not. But the great thing, though, is a lot of really talented players out there. And, they're all fun to watch.
So many great versatile players today. Grant Hill certainly won back in his day as well. Grant, thanks for joining us so much today, being very gracious with your time. You can catch Grant Hill throughout Turner's coverage of NBA All-Star Weekend and the NBA season, TNT, NBA TV, especially as co-host of Inside Stuff. Grant, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it, and best of luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks to Grant Hill and the fine folks at Turner Sports for making Grant available today. Again, he's on tonight's coverage of the Rising Stars Draft, facing off with Chris Webber as general managers. That's on Inside the NBA before the Thursday night action tonight. And then, of course, for the Rising Stars game, stepping in the broadcast booth as GM, and for the All-Star game itself, embedded as one of the bench reporters. Make sure you don't miss an Awful Announcing podcast. Subscribe or go to iTunes and search the Awful Announcing podcast. And I'm very excited because we're lining up a huge, huge guest for next week. And I know I usually don't give too much insights into who's coming up and who schedules to appear. But if you're going to listen to a podcast, next week is the time to do it, because this is someone that will be on the bucket list, the Mount Rushmore, the pantheon of AA podcast guests. Grant Hill was great, and the person that we have coming up next week is someone that's been on my list for a long, long time. So definitely make sure you're tuned in and watching for that. And of course, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and bookmark us so you don't miss a thing at awfulannouncing.com. Most of all, as always, thanks to you once again for listening. Until next time, this is Matt Yoder saying happy trails from the Awful Announcing Podcast.